It's 7:23 on Saturday night. We're sitting in the Altair Centre. My name's James Winley.
And I'm Matt Baker.
And we're here at the James Place.
Shall I tell you who I am now? We've got time enough for that, haven't we? Good.
We can't have peace without a king. Where is the king?
You'll never have him, Livingstone.
You're my friend.
A king has no friends.
There's a big sword on the stage, which we're actually very excited about.
Very reminiscent of the cross that went through the crucible of ATC's design. Remember that?
Oh, it's such a knowledgeable critic, Matt. So there's been a big poster of these plays outside Q, overlooking the Globe Theatre, the pop-up Globe, and it's kind of been taunting them with the phrase, better than Shakespeare, which is one of their review quotes. What are you expecting this to be like, Matt?
I'm expecting some high-quality production, epic theatre. I've seen the trailers, just things like the fight choreography and the costumes. I think aesthetically this is going to be very pleasing. And if you're saying it's better than Shakespeare, I'm very optimistic that there'll be a lot of historical and dramatic content for us to mine from the play.
Because I have to say, I can take or leave Shakespeare's history plays, more or less, other than Richard III, so...
Yep, I totally get that, I'm wondering if this might be a bit more along the lines of sort of Anne Boleyn sort of history, you know, drama. But I'm loving the fact that there's audience... blocks up on stage, and they're just elevated above a couple of the doorways at the back, which if I really like this and want to come back again, I'm definitely going to try and get a seat there.
Yeah, well, there are three plays to see. We're seeing the first tonight and then the next two Sunday, so we're going to be checking in as we go over 9 hours or something of theatre this weekend.
Stop being mad. I will not be married to a madman.
You don't need to have a nightmare, Jamie. I'm here.
Okay, so it's 8:47. This is during the first interval of James 1. I felt it went really quickly, our first hour.
Yeah, definitely. I actually looked on my watch and I thought there was going to be way more to come, but yeah, it flew by.
Yeah, so what we've seen so far is James I has been the prisoner of England, Henry V, for 18 years of his life, and now he's been sent back to Scotland to rule. He's just a young guy, with a big destiny.
Yeah, and we've seen him go back to the Scots and essentially try to convince them that he is still Scottish in a beautiful speech, I thought. And we've just seen the bedding night. Yeah, which is very fun. We've seen James II conceived.
That's right. New wife and got to do the bed thing. Right. So are you hooked, Matt?
Yeah, it's everything I wanted and more. I was looking for an epic drama with high production value and aesthetics, and I've got all that. I'm loving the music, the nice heavy drums. We've got some beautiful bagpipes coming through for the procession, for the coronation. Great character dynamics, the relationship between Henry and James. They're so layered, it's not black and white. There's so many subtleties to it, and I'm really loving that.
Yeah, I think the point for me was when they had King Henry V saying, shut your fucking mouth. And I'm like, okay, so we've got kind of contemporary language, making it really vivid for us. And so it's, yeah, really exciting, and only an hour in, heaps more to go.
It's very easy to access, and they're not, they say it's not Shakespeare, it's better than Shakespeare. I would just say it's not Shakespeare in regards to the fact that it's much more easily accessible, obviously, in that regard. But just the little quips that they're adding to the language are just keeping it really alive.
Yeah, but in terms of these big ideas, I mean, this is very resonant in terms of the Scottish push for independence.
I will love you, I promise. Why are you wearing
that crown? So, it is 10:14 on the Saturday night. We've just done the curtain call for James I. It's all been happening. He's had to learn how ruthless you have to be to survive as king. His defiance from Scottish lords, problems with his relationship, and a big fight scene.
Yeah. Interesting. I didn't think it sort of picked up enough for me. I was sort of expecting a lot more from the second act.
See, if this was just the end of the show, I wouldn't be completely satisfied with that ending. Like, it definitely has left me wanting more.
Yeah, exactly. It's almost like, I think maybe they said that they were accessible as standalone plays, but I don't think maybe that's necessarily entirely true.
So if this was a standalone play, it feels like there is a third act that it's actually missing?
Exactly, exactly. This feels, this essentially feels like the first two-thirds of a play. Yeah, there's definitely more to come. But yeah, I just sort of feel like maybe something about it felt quite insular in regards to the whole Scottish Lords thing, and I think maybe that's just because he was basically only dealing with one family. And there's something about that made me sort of felt like a cheap man's Braveheart a little bit. Like there weren't other parties involved except for, you know, Donaldson, and he was great, I loved him, but you know, he's this wet blanket, he wasn't anything, he wasn't really creating any conflict, he was thrown into the conflict. So yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, so the king of the entirety of Scotland, but it feels quite a small scale conflict.
So it still had that sort of, I still felt like it had that epic grandeur that I was expecting in regards to aesthetics, but the actual story seemed, yeah, a little bit more insular, which is fine because they gave them a chance to really focus on the on a lot of those characters and how their dynamics really work.
Well, I really like the story with his wife meeting and kind of having to work out and negotiate that relationship and what it's going to be.
I felt like I wanted another scene of just the two of them, because it felt like it jumped really quickly, like, because the wedding scene was so beautiful and endearing and cute, and then they had this sort of moments during the feast, and then it wasn't until we saw them in bed later on, and then I was just like, oh, okay, this has happened, this has jumped, but I didn't really see any of that.
Yeah, I did appreciate that there's a lot of really great characterizations. There's some great characters in here that we can really enjoy around the edges, as well as James One.
Yeah, I think the entire ensemble, like even down to, you know, the ensemble of this play, because obviously they'll be alternating and probably filling in roles in the others. Everyone's just, they're all active, they're all there, they're all doing something. There's no, as Raymond Hawthorne would say, there's no spare pricks at the wedding. You know, there's no one just standing around. Love that saying. And just really great three-dimensional characters. They've really gone into the... They all had strong actions that they were always playing. And they always seemed conscious of what they wanted and how they were going to interact with someone to get what they want. And I think that's a lot. That's to do with highly skilled actors and a very specific director. So I really like that.
Yeah, I mean, the staging is incredible. It's great kind of sweeping action. There's the battle's great because they juxtapose childbirth with this big battle that's kind of happening around this moment as well.
Yeah, I really like the battle. I was getting excited. I could actually feel myself getting... I could feel my muscles clenching when I was watching it, which is it's always a good sign when there's action on stage.
Yeah. What's actually pretty cool about this is, you know, this is history that we don't know.
Mm.
We're not sure quite how it's going to turn out. So we're certainly learning something along the way about the Scottish kings, for once.
Yeah, I found it really funny how Isabella, the Stuart's mother, was like, oh, it'll be a girl, and I'm sitting there going, it's not a girl, it's going to be James the Second, and it turns out it's actually a girl. So James is obviously the second born, possibly further down the line, but I thought I was being really smart and being like, oh, clever writer, but it's actually totally true.
Well, I guess we can't fight history there.
No, it's true.
Well, there you go, this is the unfiltered thoughts of the critics immediately after the show. It's 3:05 in the afternoon on Sunday, and Matt and I, James, are back in the Altair Centre, ASB Theatre, watching James II. This is the first interval of James II. So we have flash forward. James II is 6 years old at the beginning of this play. He's hiding in boxes because his father's dead and everything's going really bad, and it's taken a bit of a genre turn into horror and nightmare.
Feels like a sort of psychological thriller with just the sounds of the knives and the lights and all that kind of stuff, which I quite like, and bringing sort of those nightmares and those monsters that you sort of deal with as a child and putting them into these obviously very political circumstances. I think they're doing that quite well. I'm really enjoying that. But interestingly, as Simon Wilson, who we were just chatting to, mentioned, it feels like it's
Like, it was originally almost written for TV, and I feel like we've jumped from season one to season three, and we've actually missed season two, which was the death of James the First, and the shift that his wife has gone through.
Yeah, well, the easy comparison to make is this is a Game of Thrones world, and probably the best comparison is that all your favourite characters die.
Yeah, yeah, no, exactly, yeah, yeah. Just when you really start investing in someone, they disappear. and it's interesting because there are some references to James the First from other characters, but I don't feel like they talk about him, and I feel like I actually get a better idea of who the character was the way these people have talked about him, but I never saw that in that first James, and because I think those things happened between the two plays. It's when he really took charge, because all we saw was him taking that first stand at the very end of the play when he decides to deal with the Stuarts. But we haven't seen anything since then, so we just saw we saw the beginning of the end, as it were, but I wanted to see more of the end of the beginning.
Mm. So we're getting a bit of parallels with the first play in that you have James II, who is a prisoner of the Scots, of the Scottish lords this time, where James I was a prisoner of the English.
Mm-hmm.
And so again, we've got a story of a young king who's trying to find his place.
Mm. And again, that the relationships are really interesting. They're not just black and white. They're not flaccid. I think for some reason that's the word that comes to me.
All right.
There's a virility in the relationships, this intensity and dynamic. So it's not just, people don't just hate each other. It makes me think of Frank Underwood from House of Cards. There are layers to the manipulation, to the mistrust, or the trust. It's not simple. It's very, very layered. So there's a lot for the actors to play with. That last scene, Douglas and his son shifted beautifully towards the end. But still had all that intensity behind it.
Mm. I've got to say, I'm quite chuffed with this, because obviously the name of these plays is a great one, and the Douglas family is a big feature of this play, and Douglas is one of my middle names. Oh. So I feel like I'm really connecting with an ancient heritage of my own.
That's good. That's good. Haven't seen any. Haven't had any Bakers come through, unfortunately.
No Bakers yet.
No Bakers. Or McPhersons. That's my Scottish side. McPhersons and Thompsons. But no, I don't think we're going to see them, unfortunately.
Not important enough. No. Compared to my family.
Not historically. No. No. Got a great motto though. I quite like. Actually, thinking of getting a tattoo of that. So yeah.
I am going to bring you peace.
Okay, so now it's 4:35 on the Sunday. Just finished James 2. Much more of a kind of, it's very personal, quite an intimate story. I don't feel like it's taken us too far.
No. I'm interested to see what the through line is when we come throughout the other end of James 3. Because, yeah, you're right, it is much more of a personal story. It's more about personal relationships between characters. And it sort of takes that shift. So I think they did a really nice transition from sort of this doing this political historical play and then turning it into something else. So we don't just suddenly, if you see James 1, you don't come to James 2 and suddenly it's a completely different play, sort of ease you into it.
Yeah, I think because we know this world now, this one, it doesn't have that wow factor anymore. I think there's certainly enough of the kind of story to keep us gripped, but I'm going to be definitely looking to see what James 3 does to mix this up.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, as a two standalone plays, I'd say James 2 probably has more that you can take from it, because you can invest yourself as an audience member a little bit more into individual characters. So I think there's more to take away on a personal level. Like you said, they've gone away from the wow factor, which is good, because they're not relying on the aesthetic anymore, or the production value. It's still there, but they're not relying on that.
It is 7:34 at the interval of James 3. We've just had a character saying that soon the sun will soon be gone for good, so perhaps winter is coming.
It's terrible.
Thank you, Matt. So you were a little bit mad at me at the start of this show, because I was just turning up just before it came in, but there was stuff already happening on the stage for the first time, a pre-show.
Yeah, well, they've started each show slightly differently. In James' first, it was they kept the house lights up for a little bit, and then in James' second, they just dropped it out. And this one, it was already on. They were going off already. The lights were up, and they were singing and dancing.
Yeah.
And
there's flowers. Mm-hmm. They're doing a version of Happy. It's people in high heels and kilts for the first time.
Yeah.
So they've completely changed up their aesthetic.
Yeah. Well, yeah, we've got a whole new aesthetic that we're working with. I'm not sure how I feel about it, just because I've sort of got... It's not that I've gotten used to the other one, but I was enjoying the other one. I like the rawness of it. Obviously, this is obviously very, very reflective of the decadence of James III. So I get that, but I'm just like, oh, I did like that. Just that really raw, I don't know, Scottish vibe that I got from the other two.
And I guess this is their way of saying a lot of time now has passed. It's a new era in Scotland, so don't expect it to be like how it's been before.
It's interesting, our new protagonist, because he's... basically a douche, to put it simply.
Yeah, so he's just all about the pleasures of life versus his responsibilities as a king versus doing what Parliament wants for the country. Mm. It's kind of just all about him.
Yeah, it's funny. I'm still trying to find... It's funny because, you know, the first one was very political. It was very... First one was like Braveheart. It was all about, you know, Scotland and their independence and becoming... Well, not about their independence, but about them getting their king back and the nationalism. And the second one was very much about a very intimate relationship between the king and his boyhood friend. And now this one is something different again. It's the political element's still there, but it's not as focused on. And it's more, I guess, about... the familial relations, so it's extended out from James II. It's become more of a familial thing. Yeah.
So it is now 9:16 on the Sunday, and congratulations to us. We have finished the James trilogy. And I guess the big question is how are we feeling right now? Matt is right now stifling a big yawn.
That's more to do with lack of sleep than any boredom in the shows. I still enjoyed it. They lost me. They lost me in number three. Especially by the end, it really lost its wheels on the end of it. I don't think that play should have been called James III.
So the reason you're saying that is because it is the Queen's story, isn't it?
Yeah. And I know that that's not, you know, titular names aren't always about titular characters, but it just seemed weird that that was the end of the trilogy about the kings of Scotland. You know what I mean?
Well, I thought that was quite cool. I mean, I guess this is the history that there's this really interesting Scottish queen here who has to take up the reins because the husband is absolutely useless.
Yeah, no, that's very cool. It's very cool. I think maybe I just missed the history of the first two. I missed the way the history was presented from the first two than it was in the third one. And... yeah, I don't know. I wanted more. I would rather know more about the first two plays than have seen the third play. Do you know what I mean?
Interesting. So, would you say to people, just see the first two? Would you go that far?
I wouldn't go that far, but I would definitely put the third play in the third order of preference.
Yeah, it's the Return of the Jedi of the James plays, isn't it? Yeah, there's Ewoks in here.
Yeah, 100%. There are 100% Ewoks in this. Yeah, totally.
Yeah, I guess what I was just reflecting that I just hadn't really felt that moved, or my emotions haven't really been stirred that much throughout this experience. Do you find that?
I'd agree with that. I'd agree.
Because I'd look for that in here. I'd love some deep catharsis, and I think there's the scene at the end, which we won't go into, and I think there is an attempt for that, but it certainly didn't get me.
Yeah, and it's going to be interesting to sort of reflect on that and try and figure out why that was, because I don't know off the top of my head why that was. But I would say my order of preference would be 2, 1, 3.
I mean, 2 is interesting because it's kind of the one that has... that is least standalone, but actually as a self-contained thing in terms of its style, in terms of its subject, is pretty cool.
Yeah, I definitely found it the most gripping
of the three. And I think, yeah, as a standalone, yeah, there was a lot of stuff harking back to James 1, but I think you could probably still get by. It would be like... It's not like watching a sequel where you don't know all the information. It would just be one of those things... It'd be like watching a movie that's been made of a TV show, and you don't need to see the TV show, but you're going to miss a couple of bits from it.
Yeah.
You know? But it doesn't mean you still can't go and see the movie. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, so this has been a great way to spend the weekend.
Yeah.
And if you want to see all three on Saturday the 12th, you can do the full marathon all day. I think that would be an amazing thing to do.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. I would have. It would have been great if we could have done the marathon had it been this weekend. But you know, time. That's why we're constrained. So.
So that's our thoughts on the James plays. Look out for Matt's review on Theatre Scenes and my review on Metro.
That is Scotland. That is who I am. What are you doing in my name?
This is who I am. This is how God made me.
What have you done to us?
Death is coming for you.